you have your shirt on?
Last I checked, I did. Yes, why?
Do you have your shirt on?
Black Reds Radio, episode 5, 14 questions, with Tom Fay.
Hello Reds fans, this is Mike from WhackReds.com. You're listening to Whack Reds Radio, episode 5, 14 questions with Cincinnati Reds beat writer John Fay. How you doing today, John?
Good, good.
First of all, I want you to pitch your blog over at Cincinnati.com for me. A lot of people follow your blog. You do daily updates. What do you want our listeners to know about your site?
Well, you know, I try to get things up there as quickly as possible. Today, you know, Dusty Baker talked a little bit about Aaron Harang, and within about a half an hour after that, I had it up there. So, you know, it's basically from 3 o'clock on game days, you're going to have the latest stuff. And, you know, all off season, I try to keep things updated.
How many years have you been writing for Cincinnati? How did you get into writing? And do you have any favorite memories of the Reds along the way?
I actually started writing when I was in high school. I went to high school here at Elder, and I you know, worked for the student paper, and then I went to the University of Dayton and worked for the student paper there, and eventually started part-time at the Enquirer when I was still in college, and then you know, worked a couple years in Middletown, but I've been at the Enquirer ever since. And I was the backup on the Reds from 97 to 2001, and I've been the main guy since 2001. My fondest memory didn't happen when I was on the beat. I was a sidebar guy in 1991 that won the World Series, and that was the whole experience there. It was pretty incredible. I was fairly young in the business then, and you know, it was just an interesting experience. I think it was probably one of the more shocking World Series that they've had, you know, that we've had in the last 30 years or 40 years or whatever. So it was kind of cool to see that whole thing and kind of see this team that, you know, I'd followed pretty closely that year, that to kind of take the baseball world by surprise.
You get to travel with the team. That's yes. Got to be a lot of fun. Is there anything that the common fan doesn't see? And what would be the current mood of the clubhouse right now?
Well, you know, right now they're in a pretty bad way. So, you know, they're a little down, but I think the one thing you got to remember about baseball is there's a game pretty much every day. So they never get two down or two up. It's not like football where you lose and you've got 8 days to kind of, or 7 days to kind of deal with it. So, you know, they lost last night. They got beat up pretty bad, but they're out today. And, you know, if they win this game today against the Dodgers, you know, it's a successful series. So I think they look at it that way, the players by and large, and it's much more of a business atmosphere than I think the average fan would probably know, just from, you know, this is a job to these guys. I mean, you know, the guys love to play the game, but, you know, they come, they get their work in, it's very businesslike. And I think that what fans, it's hard to appreciate, is just the travel part of it is the grind of a 162-game season. You know, I don't play, but I travel, and it wears you down. You know, they played Florida Marlins, and I guess it was last Thursday. You know, the game ended at near midnight. They flew to Pittsburgh and then had a game the next day, you know, where you're checking in your hotel and that kind of thing. So it's a long grind. I think that's the 162-game season is probably one of the hardest thing in sports to do, just because it beats you up physically and mentally.
All right, I got to ask you this. You get to spend some time with Marty Brenneman and Jeff Brantley in the booth. How is that, and why do they call you the loose cannon?
It's one of my best parts of the day. I mean, it's more with Marty. I'm in there, and Jeff's in there, but it's, you know, Marty and I kind of, it's his thing, and I've done it pretty much since I started the beat, and it's a lot of fun. Marty's a great guy to be around. He's an interesting guy. He's a funny guy. You know, he loves to kid and get on you, but he's just he's one of the best things about being in the traveling party is he's a great guy to be around. And the loose cannon, that's something Jamie Ramsey hung on me, and you know, it's all in fun, but I was the bank president, and now I'm the loose cannon, so I guess I have to live with that.
About a month ago, you wrote an article describing how Brandon Phillips didn't want to do an interview with you because you chose to highlight a few players before him. Is it hard being a writer? Is it hard to exempt your opinion? Describe how you deal with taking the heat of being a writer.
Well, you know, the Brandon thing was it was something that, you know, happens to you occasionally where a guy doesn't want to talk to you for one reason or another. And the only reason I wrote about that is I thought the reason was kind of it kind of told a little bit about Brandon that he I think he's had some problems where he's lacked maturity in the way he's played the game. And I think that was a reflection of that, where it kind of showed a little jealousy toward other teammates, and really unfounded jealousy, because there were other guys that were more compelling stories. You know, Scott Rolen signed the renegotiated deal in the offseason. You know, Joey Votto was coming off the year where he missed 32 games with anxiety problems. And those were two of the guys that I had talked to. I think Jay Bruce was the other, who was coming off a rough year. You know, Brandon had a great year. He's a great player. But, you know, I just found that kind of odd. And, you know, I wrote about it, and I stand behind what I wrote about. You know, I've had run-ins or problems with players before, but it was usually about something I wrote. And, you know, it usually blows over. Some of the nicer guys at times took exception to something I wrote. And, you know, you're around these guys a lot, and you write a lot. So it happens. It comes with the territory. But, you know, by and large, the team is really easy to get along with. A lot of good guys on the team, a lot of guys that are really good to work with. So, and I have no complaints with anyone in the clubhouse, and not even Brandon. I mean, I don't want anyone to think I didn't like him or anything. I think, you know, in that story I wrote about some of the things that happened last year, some of the incidents where he ignored a sign, where he didn't run out of ball, where he said his wrist was broken and it wasn't. It's just, I think those kind of things detract a little bit from what Brandon is as a player. And I think he's, you know, as I said, I think he's a very good player. He's on borderline great. And I think when he overcomes those kind of things, I think you'll see this guy become one of the true elite players in the game.
I know he looks up to Barry Larkin. You were quoted saying that he didn't have three incidents like Brandon Phillips had in his 19-year career.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, Barry had some issues, you know, more with management, you know, with a contract and that kind of thing. But he was a guy that played the game right. You know, he played here 19 years, and I can't remember any time where somebody said he didn't hustle or play it the right way. You know, he had the deal where he left the game early at the end of the season the one time with Jack McKeon. But, you know, other than that, I think on the field the guy always gave his best effort. And, I don't question Brandon's effort most of the time, but I think he's a guy that kind of gets down on himself every once in a while and takes it onto the field.
Edson Volquez was recently suspended for 50 games for failing a major league drug test. What are your thoughts on the suspension? A lot of people are saying it's not going to hurt the Reds. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it hurts the Reds, basically, because he's going to serve the time. By the time he's ready to pitch, he'll be eligible to pitch. I think, for Edison, he's a young guy who this is one of the first years he's making decent money. I think when you talk about one-third of his salary, basically, that's a pretty good hit. When you look at some of the things guys do around other sports and what they get fined for them. You know, his explanation was that he took some kind of fertility drug to help conceive a child. You know,
ooh.
I have no reason not to believe him. If I had to make a list of the 25 guys who I would think were the least likely to take steroids, I'd put Edison pretty far up there, simply because he's not a huge workout guy. He's not a huge muscular guy. But, you know, he admitted he made a mistake. And I think what players have to do in this situation is they can't take anything, prescribed or not, unless they know it's approved. And I think if he had gone through that step, he would have found out that what this was probably on the banned substance list. So, you know, I feel bad for the guy if that's how it went down. But I think the players realize they have to play by these rules, and they're pretty strict.
The Reds have Mike Leake going for him on the mound tonight in a much-needed win, a much-needed long start from a starter. You've compared him to Greg Maddux, and in spring training you also had a conversation with him where he described himself as Godzilla.
Well, I think with the Godzilla thing, he was just kind of, it was a flip kind of comment. He's a real low-key, soft-spoken guy, you know. I think it mellow Californian kind of fits him. I think his style is a lot like Greg Maddux. I would never say that a guy who's 23 years old is going to be as good as him, but he's not overpowering. He has tremendous movement on his pitches, and that's how he gets by. I mean, but you know, this is going to be a tremendous test for him tonight. This Dodgers lineup is just maybe the best in the league. So, you know, but he's passed every test so far. I think one of the things that you really have to give him credit for is he was pitching for a job, and you know, he went out there. I think it was against the A's, basically, and he had to put up a good performance to make the team, and he did it, you know. And then his two starts have been very good. He's the one guy in the rotation right now who's been pretty pitch efficient. That's one of the reasons the Reds are really struggling, is these guys are running their pitch counts up very high. And although he's walked a lot of people, he's walked 11 and two starts, he's been able to keep his pitch count reasonable. And you know, he pitched seven in the one game, and you know, got into the seventh in the other.
Yesterday, the Reds announced they hired Joe Morgan as a special advisor to baseball operations. His name is included in the likes of Eric Davis, Mario Soto, Ken Griffey Sr., and just recently, Barry Larkin and Sean Casey have came back to the Reds. How important is it that the Reds bring back old players, and do you have any insights on the Joe Morgan situation?
Well, I think it's important. I think it's, you know, those guys were pretty much away from the club for a fairly long period of time. I think since the Castellini family took over, they've made that a point of emphasis to try to bring these guys back. I think, you know, in a lot of cases, it's pretty ceremonial, but I think in this case with Joe, I don't think he's going to have much to do with baseball. I think he may advise here and there, but I think the important thing he's going to try to do is reestablish baseball in the African American community here, and that's a big subject for baseball. And I think he's the right guy to do it, and this is the right place to do it. So I think it's you have to give the Reds a lot of credit. They've done a lot very well in the community. They haven't won, but since the Castellini's taken over, they've really emphasized community involvement and trying to get in touch with the past. The rich past of this team.
If you would, describe your love-hate relationship with the game of baseball.
The thing I love about covering baseball is there's a game almost every day. You know, I've covered other sports, and you kind of, you know, you spend a lot of time building up to games. Here, there's a game every day, and there's a lot of interesting stories. And as far as professional sports right now, baseball players are very accessible. You know, I can get to them pretty much any time, and they're really easy to deal with. I think the thing I hate about it is being away from home a lot. You know, I don't have any children, but I'm married, and, you know, you spend a lot of time away from your wife and your home. And, you know, spring training is a great thing, but you're gone for 6 weeks, so you kind of have to uproot your life and change things. So that's not to be taken as a complaint, but that's the one drawback to this job, I'd say.
The Reds manager, Dusty Baker, is in his last year of a three-year contract. You said on Red Leg Nation Radio that he needs to win to secure his job. Do you think it's going to be up to him or the Reds this year?
Well, I think a manager at any time has some effect on it, you know, but you're pretty much given the hand you're dealt with. If Dusty Baker and Joe Girardi switched places, I don't think you'd see a huge difference in the record. I mean, the Yankees are going to win, you know, 95 to 100 games this year because they have a stacked lineup and they have a $200 million payroll. But I think Dusty can affect things somewhat. You know, this team has, you know, they had some questions going in. I think all along kind of questioned the offense. They've got some unproven guys out there, and those guys haven't come through yet. Drew Stubbs and Jay Bruce. So, you know, and Aaron Harang struggled tremendously. So I think, you know, you got the team you're dealt, and, you know, I think Dusty understands that, but I think any manager knows in the third year of a three-year contract, and you haven't won the first two, you have to win the third to probably come back.
The Reds are off to a rough 6-9 start this season. They got beat up last night, like you said, one of the best lineups in the National League. What do you think the Reds need to do to fix their bad start? Do they need to bring up pitching? Do they need to bring up a bat? Travis Wood isn't doing too well down in Louisville, but Matt Maloney is, and the Nick Massett problem needs to be fixed, in my opinion.
Well, I think, you know, in the case of Nick Massett, they just have to live with him. I think he's going to come around. I think with Aaron Harang, we talked to Dusty about it today, and I think you could see something happen where he's at least skipped the start or something. But basically, what the Reds have to do is pitch better. I think the first six games they came out. They started the season 5-3. They were pitching pretty well. They haven't pitched well since. I think if the starting pitching doesn't improve, they've got no chance. I think they have some depth at Louisville. And they have Aroldis Chapman, so I think at some point they're going to have to look at that if things don't turn around. I think we'll see what he does. He's pitching tonight. The guy has dynamic stuff. He throws harder than anybody in baseball probably. So I think they may have to look at that at some point, but this team is going to be as good or bad as it is because of pitching. They just have to live with what they've got and hope it turns around.
All right, with that said, what would be your predictions for the season? Do you think this is the same old Reds this year, or is it just the same old Reds fans becoming discouraged too early?
Well, I think fans have every right to be discouraged. The team hasn't won in 9 years, and they've gotten off to a bad start, and they've played very bad lately. But it's 15 games, so that there's a lot of games left to play. And I think if the pitching can come around and be as advertised, I think they've got a chance to be pretty good. I thought at the beginning of the season, maybe 84, 85 wins if things went right. I still think that. They're three games under 500. They can. You can turn it around, but they need their big guys to be better. And I'm talking more about pitching than anything. The starting pitching's 14th or 15th in the league right now, and it just can't be that bad. The bullpen, I think, will come around. I think Massett will be okay eventually. And, they were third in the National League last year in relief pitching. So I think it comes down to the pitching, and I think if things go right, you can look for them to, break that streak of nine straight losing seasons.
Okay, you can be found at Cincinnati.com. You've got a blog. You've also got a Twitter account. That's at John Fayman. Do you think the new technology in journalism hinders or helps your job?
I don't know if it hinders or helps. It's a reality. You can't, when I started, even in 2001, and all I wrote for was the paper. Now I'm writing for, you've got Twitter, you got a blog, we got stuff we're putting on the internet, and it's a much more fast-paced world, and people want stuff now, and that's the way it is, and it's much more an internet-driven industry now. So, I enjoy it. I think it gives you more of a connection with the fans, where not that long ago people could write you a letter or maybe email, but now people, with Twitter particularly, they can kind of get to me almost instantly. So it's interesting. I think fans can participate in a little more, and all the talk about social media, so it kind of gives people a way to kind of join in on things.
All right, our 14th question always revolves around Pete Rose. What are your thoughts on Pete Rose and his banishment from baseball?
Well, I'd like to see him back in the game, but I think at the same time, with Bud Selig, I just don't think it's going to happen. I think Joe Morgan said on WLW last night that he doesn't see it happening with Bud Selig, and I think Pete's partly to blame for that. He does stuff that puts baseball in a bad light. I mean, I'm sure people that follow you guys heard about the Howard Stern interview and stuff, and that just doesn't make Pete look good. It's part of his personality and the way he is, but Selig looks on that stuff and just kind of shakes his head. So, but I think Bud Selig retires in 2 or 3 years or whatever, and I think maybe after that something could happen. But I'd be really surprised if something did before.
Everybody seems to not question his numbers, but everybody I hear from has a bad story about Pete Rose.
Yeah, like I said, it's part of his personality. But, if you look at what he did on the field, there's no question he's a Hall of Famer. He would have been a first ballot. He would have been, very close to getting the highest percentage. But, it's part of the package.
All right, John. Well, thanks a lot for your time.
No problem.
Check out John at Cincinnati.com. We'll check back in with you later on in the season.
All right. Thanks.
Oh, drat these computers. They're so naughty and so complex. I could pinch them.